This episode of the Single Tracks podcast is sponsored by Glowworm Lights. Glowworm is a mountain bike light brand founded almost a decade ago by two mountain bikers in New Zealand, and today the company offers some of the highest quality bike lights on the market, including Bluetooth control and complete customization through their app. Glowworm's complete line of lights start at 1200 lumens and range up to a blinding 3600 lumens, all at reasonable prices. Save 15% off all light systems on the Glowworm website with the coupon code SINGLETRACKS2021. Shop for lights at glowwormlights.co.nz and be sure to check for the link in the show notes. Hey everybody, welcome to the Single Tracks podcast. My name is Jeff, and today my guest is Tyson Swayze. Tyson is a mountain biker and trail builder who has lived in Moab, Utah for his entire life. He's currently the operations coordinator for Grand County, Utah Active Transportation and Trails. Thanks for joining us, Tyson.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, it's good to be on the podcast. Excited to talk about Moab today.
Yeah. Well, tell us a bit about your background. I was going to ask how you ended up in Moab, but I guess you were born there, so you didn't really have a choice. But like, yeah, what are you doing in Moab?
Born and raised in Moab. I've left it a number of times and I kind of wind up back here. Worked mostly in bike shops since I was 12 years old. And about 10 years ago, started getting involved with Moab Trail Mix. And they're the entity that's kind of built and now maintains a lot of the single track, mountain bike single track in the area. Started out volunteering with them, and that kind of evolved into a kind of career of trail building that's kind of brought me back around full circle back to Moab as the operations coordinator for Grand County Trails, which is kind of just what Trail Mix has become now. So we're actually a part of the county, and yeah, we build, maintain, and work with the BLM on all of our mountain bike trails in the area.
Yeah, that's really cool. Well, I'm curious to know, has Moab always been a tourist destination? Like, why does the town even exist?
Yeah, actually, I dug around a little bit last night on the history of Moab because I know it fairly well. But, of course, Native Americans have been using the Moab Valley for thousands of years. It's part of the old Spanish Trail came through. So that went from Taos to L.A., so it actually crossed where the Moab Highway 191 bridge is now because of its kind of shallow river. The town itself was established around 1900. And as early as 1906, they started promoting the area for tourism possibilities, which I found that I'd never read that before and found that interesting that for, 114 years, we've been plugging Moab for tourism. But it went through the 40s and 50s as a uranium mining town. And that's what Moab was, it was a boom, serious boom town through the 50s and into the 60s. And then it all kind of went bust in the 60s and 70s with mining. And that's kind of when tourism started picking up. River rafting became kind of a craze. And, with the Colorado River running right through town, it was an easy sell. Getting outdoors and canyoneering and all that started to become more popular. And then in the 80s, of course, mountain bikes started to become a thing. And because we had all this mining in the area, there was roads that got built everywhere to every corner of this desert. So there was lots to explore, and mountain bikes kind of were, the one of the perfect fits to explore those. Of course, people had been jeeping and riding motorcycles out here for years before that. But that's kind of what really, in the 80s is when the town really started to kind of start to turn around into a tourist community. And then the 90s is when things really, the accelerator kind of got pushed and... kind of got to where we are today.
Yeah, interesting. Was your family connected with tourism in any way? Like, is that how your family ended up in Moab?
Yeah, my dad moved here for mining originally in the early 70s. And then worked for Tagalong as a river guide for a while in the 70s, and
Okay.
then opened a store on Main Street. He was a
Wow.
jeweler, and then my mom was kind of just traveling through and managed to stick around. And a lot of my family's history, the Swayze history, is on the San Rafael Swell, which is west of here, but kind of the Western folklore of Butch Cassidy and all them kind of intertwines with my family a little bit. So,
Oh, wow. That's
but as far
super
as
cool.
Moab, yeah, we've been here, second generation Moab, I guess. My
Yeah.
dad moved here
Well,
pretty early on.
that's interesting too, how it kind of ties into the story that we hear about other mountain bike destinations, especially like up and coming ones where there was an industry that was based on, resource extraction. And then, these towns are having to make that transition. And it sounds like, I mean, even within your own family, like your dad came there as a part of the mining industry, and then he personally made that switch to tourism, which is really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely the classic boom and bust story that's happening all over the country,
Yeah.
right?
Well, it seems like Moab was a mountain bike destination before there even were mountain bike destinations. And I find that so interesting because there are a lot of great places to ride around the country. But, even in like the 90s, I remember, that's all anybody talked about was like Moab. I live in Georgia, I live on the East Coast, and people were talking about it like, you have to go ride Moab. What is it that you think makes the area so great for mountain biking?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it, I mean, what got Moab really like that early foot in the door with being an easy mecca is the Slick Rock Bike Trail, was, that was built by motorcycles and established, designated in 1969.
Oh, wow.
So there was already this piece of single track. It's all on slick rock. So, it was just painted on the rock, but it was already there. And then beyond that, kind of talking about, we kind of mentioned like because of the uranium mining, there were just survey roads and mining roads going everywhere. And by the time the 80s hit, those roads were starting to kind of get worn in and starting to erode away. So they were getting a little rougher, and they were more than just like these graded roads out through the desert. So that made them a little more exciting and a little more entertaining for biking on. And so that was a big part of it. Another thing that's pretty funny is when you talk to people who were here in the late 80s and early 90s, above and beyond Slick Rock, the first guidebook for the area was already here. The
Wow.
I can't remember, it was Todd Campbell wrote that. Can't remember it. I mean, you come to Moab and you're just hearing about it, and you look on the counter and there's already like this inch thick book of like places to mountain bike.
Yeah.
And they were just he was way ahead of the curve with writing that book.
Yeah.
So from early on, they'd already figured out a lot of these routes. It also helped that Rim Cyclery opened in 1983,
Oh,
like
wow.
right on the cusp of like mountain bikes becoming a thing. They were one of the
Yeah.
first specialized dealerships in the country. And they were just an overall gear store for climbing and rafting and everything else, but quickly jumped on mountain biking and kind of started pushing that for the area.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that Slick Rock has been around since what, the late 60s? How did the
Yeah.
first trails get built? Like, were they kind of social trails that people in town were riding, or was there like an official push to like get actual trails built in the area?
Yeah, through, up until pretty much 2000, all through the 90s, what was making Moab famous was all the old Jeep roads, all the old mining roads. We had 9 miles of single track in the area that consisted of kind of what's still our most advanced trails, which is Porcupine Rim, now more commonly known as the bottom of the whole enchilada, Jackson Trail out on Amasovac, and the Portal Trail. And beyond that, there was almost nothing. There was a couple of moto single track trails that had been built, but it was really like Amasovac Jeep Road and Porcupine Rim keeping that mountain bike mecca kind of status going. Until Fruita, really, I think was one of the big turning points for Moab. Fruita started building mountain bike single track.
Uh-huh.
And I think that was like a big kind of like, wait, you can do that. That's a thing now. And I remember I was working at Rim Cyclery at that time. I was in high school and, you know, all the bike shops were noticing this little bit of a dip in visitation. And it's because, mm-hmm. you know, people coming from Denver weren't going as far because Fruita had all this single track all of a sudden. And
right.
it wasn't all this gnarly Jeep road that we had around here. So it was a little easier too for people and a little less rough on the bikes and body. Mm-hmm. So that is really what spurred Grand County Trail Mix to become formed. And Grand County Trail Mix is a county committee that represents all non-motorized recreation for the area. Mm-hmm. So it's hiking, it's biking, it's equestrian use, snow sport, climbing access. And they started working to develop single track however they could. And so that was kind of the beginning of it was around late 90s or, you know, early 2000s, and that they didn't really gain a whole lot of traction until 2010 is when we really started building a lot of single track. You asked about like user created trails versus, you know, kind of how they were built, and really we haven't had a lot of user created trails. Some of the slick rock routes in the area were kind of user created. The whole enchilada, the original route, was a user created route using kind of existing hiking trails and some cow trails.
Yeah.
That kind of over the years got parts of it got closed and then rebuilt and, by the land agencies. So, but most of it was most of the, you know, the bulk of our trail systems have been done, legally and fully designed and everything by Trail Mix. And then, working with the BLM to do all the environmental assessments on it beforehand. And
yeah.
So
it's really interesting that you mentioned Fruita being sort of, the driver behind like the early 2000s push to like build, you know, more single track. Cause I remember around that time, people saying like, oh, Fruita, is that the next Moab? Like, I don't think I made that up. I think people were saying it and like,
Moab was
competition
dead for a while.
Is good. Competition seems to have driven, Moab to really up the game there. And there's a ton of great new trail to show for it. And still, you know, I mean, I think most people, they would still prefer to go to Moab than Fruita. The Fruita is awesome too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fruita is awesome for sure. And, you know, since then we've built, over 150 miles of single track trails.
Wow.
Dispersed throughout six different trail systems. So yeah. And a lot of, we've kind of built everything we didn't have. It was fun to watch the switch in Moab between kind of riders who could ride all this gnarly hard Jeep trail stuff, you know, day after day. And then once Trail Mix started building these more intermediate and beginner friendly trail systems, locals kind of started coming out of the woodwork to mountain bike again. You know, like our local mountain bike kind of just population was, I wouldn't say stagnant, but it was like the same people for a long time. And once we started getting these slightly easier trails, more friendly just to learn on trails, we started seeing climbers kind of coming over to mountain biking and rafters especially, because it's such an easy thing compared to rafting to do. And you can do it in shoulder seasons. And so it was really fun to see as this kind of trail boom started to happen for us, just the switch even in our local economy of people utilizing these trails and, you know, cycling on them more and running too, of course, you know. So there's a huge running community here.
Well, I want to jump right to it then and get your take. What are some of the like family friendly rides in Moab that, you know, visitors and locals alike enjoy riding?
Yeah. So for kind of beginner trails, you know, our level of beginner, I would say, is higher than a lot of the country. So we always recommend if you're new to the area and more of a beginner rider, like check out something, you know, check out something that's easy and then go from there. So we have like the Moab Brands Trails, which are 9 miles north of town, that have a couple of great options out there. Same with North Klondike. North Klondike Bluffs Trail System has a number of easier trails, Jasper and Agate. And I mean, the best thing to do is come into a local bike shop and just say, I've never ridden here before. Where should I go for my first ride? And what they'll do is they'll send you to one of these trails. And ideally what you do then is you go back to them and say, that was too hard, or that was way too easy. And then those, you know, I mean, your local bike shop is, you know, the professionals, right? Like utilize them as much as you can and get that. But, you know, the Moab Brand Trails is great for beginner riders. You know, beyond, so that's kind of your family friendly stuff. You know, from there,
you mentioned the bike shops being a good source of recommendations, and you know, it should be mentioned, and I think we'll talk about this a bit more, but like most of the shops, they're also doing, they have all kinds of other services there in town. It's not like, you know, my local bike shop here in Atlanta where they're just focused on like selling bikes and doing repairs and stuff. I mean, most of the shops in Moab, from what I've seen, they're also going to have guiding services or tours or things like that. And so they know a lot more. They're set up to really help people find the best places to ride. Is that sort of an accurate representation?
Yeah. I mean, all the shops are tied in closely with tour companies, so they can, if you don't reach out directly to a tour company, they can get you set up with one. And they're all super professional, incredible mechanics at all these shops, because people come here to ride for 2 days, 3 days, you know, their bike breaks on day one, whether it's a suspension problem or, you know, they're used to fixing things very fast and turning you around, getting you out the door, you know, that day, if not the next morning.
Yeah. That is a lot different from what a lot of us are used to, where it's like, drop it off, I'll be ready in a week or two.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's a big, they just have the, they have the mechanic workforce to kind of turn things around super quick. And, you know, same thing with rental bikes, all the shops, I think we have five shops that all have 30 to over 100 rental bikes at each shop. So if your bike does break, there's a good chance you can probably get on a rental bike for the day. Or, you know, if you're looking to travel to Moab, I definitely recommend getting reservations on bikes, because they do fill up, and they can sometimes be hard to find if you're coming in the busy seasons.
Yeah. Well, which are some of the more challenging trails in the area? The ones that, you know, really, if you're a beginner, you definitely want to avoid. And, you know, even if you're someone who thinks you know how to ride and you're really good in your local trails, what's one that's really going to challenge even those people?
Yeah, I mean, Gold Bar Portal. So Gold Bar Rim and Portal, it's kind of the end of the Mag 7 trail system. But those are two of our most technically and physically demanding trails. Gold Bar Rim is essentially, you're right on the edge of a couple hundred foot cliff riding across this rim line. And it's kind of trends downhill, but it's kind of, you know, it's pretty flat. So it's really physically demanding, because there's these, there's steps up and down, and you're just constantly engaged with technical terrain. And then you end that with the Portal Trail, which descends down to the river. And it is definitely our most advanced piece of trail, and it's our most exposed. People have actually fallen off of it and died before.
Yeah, that's the one that has the sign, right? That says, dismount your bike, people have died here.
Yeah, there are signs. There have been signs put up. And nobody, since those signs have gone up, I don't think anybody's died.
They're working. That's great.
They're working. So, and, you know, beyond Gold Bar and the Portal Trail, you know, the bottom of Porcupine Rim is 5 miles of single track that's super advanced as well. Pothole Rock Stacker out on the Amasaback trail system is very physically and technically demanding as well. Mm-hmm. It is kind of interesting that like our most challenging trails are kind of our historic trails. So like Portal, Porcupine Rim, and Jackson's Trail were all built for moving cows and horses, over these cliff bands. And we're fortunate to still have those and now be able to ride bikes down them, right? It's pretty amazing. Beyond that, if you're not looking for the most challenging trail that's out there, Captain Ahab is of course the one of the technical trails that we've built that's hugely popular and a really good also intro if you're an advanced rider and you feel pretty good about your skills but you're not quite sure about like your technical riding, like that's definitely go ride Haimasa and Captain Ahab out at Amasaback, and that'll give you a good baseline of all those trails we talked about before are definitely a step above that and harder, but that's a good intro to Moab technical riding.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I imagine for a lot of people visiting, the number one trail that they want to ride is going to be the whole enchilada. Is that one that you would recommend for people, like if they only have, a day in town, or are there other ones that maybe are just as good or fun ones to ride?
Yeah, the whole enchilada is a tricky one because it is, the whole thing's rated Black Diamond and it is long. It trends downhill, but by no means would you ever call it a downhill trail. The lower portion of it, Porcupine Rim, is 7.5 miles of rock garden, essentially. It's this old mining road that is just eroded away to just this rough, rocky, gnarly thing that is, it's engaging for a mountain bike. That's why it's a road, but it is very engaging. And so it is fun in that sense. Mm-hmm. And it is, kind of that world-class, it is world-class because of that. Is it the one I would do? I don't, that it's a hard question because we ride it so much that I'm like, no, I would go do Ahab, honestly. I would go ride Captain Ahab probably if I just had one day. But, if that's what you're here to do and you've done your research and you're at that level, you can ride a Black Diamond technical rocky trail just fine. Then yeah, it is amazing. It is hard too, because depending on the time of year, the whole enchilada can be 16 miles on up to 30 miles based on where the snow line is and what's melted. So you can, technically the whole enchilada starts up in the mountains at 11,000 feet.
Right.
And descends down. But depending on the time of year you're here, you might get dropped off at Hazard County, which is a couple miles lower at 9,000 feet as well. And then down to Cocopelli. And so it just kind of also depends on the time of year. And basically the shuttles always run to the highest point possible. So it can also be tricky. You might be planning to go to Hazard County and, that Burrow Pass is melted out all of a sudden and you're going up to that. So you do have to be careful and communicate kind of with the shuttle companies and make sure you know where you're going. It's one I definitely recommend if you're going to do it for your first time. Do some research. Don't just watch the cool bro videos online. Have an idea of what you're getting into and pack accordingly too. It's amazing how many people get dropped off with like a water bottle in a tube. It's like, actually probably should have two or three tubes if it's your first time.
that's a good recommendation. And it's interesting too, because I feel like today, anybody says Moab, everybody's going to chime in with, you got to ride a whole enchilada. Whereas like 10, 20 years ago, it was, you got to ride Slick Rock. Is that Slick Rock still one to ride? I know even back then people were like, oh no, that's just, the one that everybody rides. Like there's better stuff. But what's your feeling about Slick Rock?
Yeah, Slick Rock's, it's been interesting to watch kind of Slick Rock, because when I was a kid, I started mountain biking here when I was 12. So I've been doing it a while, and I was actually given my first job on Slick Rock at a local bike shop. A guy was following me. My dad would drop me off up there. And I would just ride back to town when I was done. But this local guy, Kevin Dwyer, was following me around. He noticed I was alone. He comes up and he's like, "What are you doing out here?" And I was like, "Oh, my dad just dropped me off and I go ride around and ride home and I'm done." And he's like, that's interesting. Do you want a job in a bike shop for bike parts?" And yeah. So Slick Rock's really special to me because I've been riding it since I was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
But there was definitely a time, especially during like, you know, fruit of building mountain bike trails and kind of this boom of mountain bike single track, that Slick Rock was kind of, it was like, why go ride Slick Rock? It's awful. It's horrible. Like, and I feel like since that it's actually kind of switched and bikes have become better.
Mm-hmm.
And Slick Rock's a little easier on a mountain bike, I feel, now than it used to be. And it's actually really popular again. And we always recommend it as like a great like evening. Like you can go up and ride, you know, you ride 2 miles of Slick Rock, you've pretty much ridden all of Slick Rock, you know, like just the experience is what that trail is all about. Like there's some great viewpoints out at the end of the main loop of Slick Rock, but if you don't get there, you're not going to miss, like, it's not the end of the world. So I always tell people, even if you just have like a couple hours, like in the evening before sunset, go up and do the practice loop or do an out and back on the main loop just to experience it. Cause it's all sandstone, you know, there's like 3 spots on the entire trail where you touch sand and the rest of the time you're on rock. So it's really cool in that regards. And like nothing else you will ride. It's amazing in that, that sense. So
that's cool. Yeah. I remember doing an evening ride out there on Slick Rock one time, as actually my first time going to Moab, and we chose August, which is not the best time of year to visit Moab, as we'll probably talk about later. But, it was just so hot during the day and we said, okay, we'll go back in the evening, you know, when the sun's down. And we got out there that evening and it was still so hot because like the rocks were like radiating heat. And so I think that time we ended up riding it like the next morning, like as early as we could get out there, because August it gets hot.
Yeah. I just don't come here in the summer if you want a mountain bike. Like it is just search and rescue has so many calls of people just getting over their head and getting dehydrated and getting heat exhaustion. Like if you can just avoid it at all costs.
Yes.
July, August. Most of June is hot, but you know, like you said, you did ride in the morning, you did ride late, and you can do it. And we do have a lot of single track now that kind of allows for that. And I guess kind of going back on your initial question of like Slick Rock versus whole enchilada, you know, the whole enchilada was developed over a number of years and then eventually legalized. And yeah, since it became legalized, like people, it's been put on everyone's bucket list. Right. Yeah. And so that's why we definitely harp on like the educate yourself before you get here. Don't just sign up for the shuttle online and go do it. Make sure you have what you need. But also because of that, we've been developing, a alternative route off of the whole enchilada called the Raptor route.
Hmm.
And so what that does is it allows you at LPS, which is right above Porcupine Rim, it allows you to kind of get off the whole enchilada route and ride, when it's complete, it'll be 9.5 miles of purpose-built single track that parallels Sand Flats Road toward Moab.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's really important because it allows a, more intermediate advanced friendly ride for users. Mm-hmm. But it also allows you like 5 different bailout options or exit options onto Sand Flats Road.
Yeah.
So if it's, you know, for riders, especially if you're starting at Burrow Pass, you know, you climb over 1,000 feet and then descend down Burrow Pass and Hazard County and Cocopelli, by that time, a lot of people are already getting pretty spent. Yes, and so
me, I did that exact thing that you're describing where we were on a bikepacking trip. And we're dropping down off of Burrow Pass and, you know, fully loaded on bikes. And yeah, by the time I got to LPS and was done with that, I was like, I'm not doing Porcupine with all this gear. Like, so I jumped on Sand Flats. So that's awesome that you would have like a single track option there that could get you off the road.
And even as locals, a lot of time in the summer and in the fall, we're kind of bummed when we can't get like a shuttle up to LPS or something, because, you know, you're coming down all these miles. And then if you ride Porcupine, you're just, it's so rough. And then you end on the most advanced part of the whole trail at the last 5 miles. So we want to, you know, we're really kind of pushing this Raptor route idea and kind of getting it into people's heads that there is an alternative option that doesn't just include riding down Sand Flats Road. And it's purpose built and it's more single track than you'll ride on a Porcupine Rim. So that's been a big project over the last 2 years, and that'll be complete next fall.
Okay.
Right now there's seven and a half miles of it, and we have a 2 mile section left to build, but you can currently go down it and use like the Porcupine Rim Jeep climb. You go down the climb and then you get onto Falcon Flow, which is a 5.5 mile single track on in Sand Flats. So.
Cool. Well, I also want to ask you about some of the lesser known trails in Moab. I'm always surprised that there are a lot more trails in the area, especially as you go up in elevation. One of the trails I remember riding that just kind of blew my mind that it was even, you know, close to Moab was a trail called Moonlight Meadows, I think. And is, you know, it was very lush and green up there, and there's like aspen trees. And are there a lot of trails like that in the forest that you would recommend to people who have kind of done all the usual trails in Moab or closer to town?
Kind of. The La Salle Mountains are, they're a bit of a beast. The climbs are really hard. A lot of the climbs are on road. So, but like you said, Moonlight Meadows is a beautiful trail. There's also a trail called Schumann's Trail, which is near Warner Lake, which is a great loop. You do it from the Ooah Lake Road, and you can make a loop out of it, and it's really nice. So, yeah, if you are here in the summer, there are some options up there. You definitely want to be prepared with a map. And some local info on it. Cause it's, you know, we haven't mapped out and signed everything up there like we have in the desert. So it's a little more adventurous, a little, you know, your classic mountain biking versus what we've done in the desert. And be prepared for some climbing. You know, in the summer, locals, what we'll do is we'll ride up the Ooah Lake Road and then up Moonlight Meadows. And then up and over Burrow Pass and then down Schumann's Trail. So that's an excellent, it's a big ride. Yeah, I mean, it's like nine miles of climbing. But there are, you know, if you're here in the hotter seasons, there's definitely some good options up there, and definitely recommend going into a shop and getting a map, getting the local beta on what you should do and shouldn't do. Cause yeah, there's some places you just don't want to go up there. You'll be pushing your bike forever. And there's some gems like Moonlight Meadows and Schumann's for sure.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I want to talk a little bit about the groups who build and maintain trails in the Moab area. You mentioned the Trails Mix group, I believe. Mm-hmm. How is that organized and funded and all of that good stuff?
Yeah, so Grand County Trail Mix started, like I said, about 20 years ago. And they worked, they're responsible for a lot of the single track that got built, and basically they're a county committee, and they got to a point where they were starting to build a fair amount of trail, more than volunteers could really do and more regular than just a volunteer day here and there. So they started paying, trail builders through a local nonprofit. And then after, 6 or 7 years of doing that, the local nonprofit was kind of like, what are you doing here? Like, you need to figure out your own nonprofit or move this along somehow. And because we were a county committee, fortunately, we had county commissioners and our economics department, community and economic department kind of knew the value of Trail Mix and what they were doing. And they said, you know, why don't we bring this into the county and pay you all as county employees. So we're fortunate enough now that we have 2 full-time employees and up to 6 part-time people seasonally. And So Grand County, the long name, Grand County Active Transportation and Trails, is now our department that maintains all the single track in the area. Mm-hmm. And continue to work with the BLM to expand options for more more trail. And so, yeah, we work closely with them. This summer, we also work with the Forest Service. So we work primarily on the whole enchilada in the forest. Mm-hmm. So this summer, we were up working on Burrow Pass as well. So, and as far as the funding, it comes from grants. Comes from donations and some transient room tax money as well that we get okay. from taxes on hotel beds and restaurants.
Yeah. Interesting. So. And what happened to that local trail club? Is there still a club that operates separately from Grand County Trail Mix?
Yeah. So Grand County Trail Mix is still a county committee and they still mm-hmm. meet monthly. And they're still representing all the non-motorized users. So we work... Our county department works with them directly to kind of, you know, do the work that they've been doing for 20 years and continue to maintain all the single track that's been put on the ground. So they are still very active and, still going.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So what type of bike do most people ride in Moab? Do you have like a recommendation if someone's like, I'm coming for the first time, like what kind of bike do I need?
I mean 5 to 6 inch travel bikes are really great for the area. Closer to 5 inch than 6 inch I recommend, because there's a lot of pedaling, right? Desert terrain is constantly up and down. It's you know, my main bike that I ride is an Ibis Ripley.
Okay.
I also have an Ibis Rip Mo that I use on like the more advanced stuff. But like if you're riding Moab Brand Trails, Klondike, Mag 7 area, like that 5 inch travel or even 4 inch travel 2.9er is, or your kind of down country bike, I guess you could call it, is pretty great. But you definitely want some travel because of the rocks. It is everything. Even our XC beginner rides still have quite a bit of rock in them.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Yeah. And the 6 inch travel bike will just make it a little more cushy and enjoyable, but it can be a lot on the pedaling sometimes, you know, a lot more work.
Yeah. Interesting. Do a lot of people rent bikes when they visit? Like, do you see many people who are like there for paddling or rafting, or maybe they're mm-hmm. like visiting the national park and they say, oh, hey, I'm going to rent a bike and go try this mountain biking thing. Is that common? And if so, like, are there plenty of shops to find rental bikes?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have every bike shop in town rents bikes, and every shop has, I think, between 30 and 100 rental bikes. So there's a lot of rental bikes floating around. A lot of people do. And, you know, you can now fly into Moab as well from Salt Lake or Denver. So a lot of people are doing that, just flying in for a weekend and rent a bike and go pedal around. Or... you mentioned like if people are here rafting or climbing or doing other things, yeah, they'll definitely try to get in every sport they can and experience it, you know? Yeah. So there's a lot of bike shops and a lot of opportunity to rent bikes. Definitely recommend reserving them, if you're planning out your vacation, just cause they can, even, you know, some of the shops with close to 100 rental bikes still rent out most of those bikes, daily. Yeah, definitely get the insurance. if the shop offers insurance, get it. The yes. rocks in this area will tear up a bike quickly, and
that's good advice. So we mentioned the whole enchilada, which is a ride that is a shuttle ride. Somebody, you know, you're going to get driven to the start of it. I won't say the top, because I mean it is the top, but like you said, there's lots of climbing. It's not like you just don't have to pedal. But are there some other popular guided or shuttled tour routes that people are going to want to consider riding in Moab?
Yeah, the other big shuttle trail that people go to is the top of Mag 7 or Gemini Bridges. Okay. It is also just like the whole enchilada is definitely not a downhill ride. It's downhill trending, but you're gonna be pedaling a lot. And so what Mag 7 is it's a whole trail system. So there's options to do loops within it as well, or you can ride straight through the trail system. And then you have the option to either ride out the Gemini Bridges Road to Highway 191, or you can go on to ride Gold Bar Rim and the Portal Trail.
Okay.
The Gold Bar Rim and Portal Trail part, of course, is for advanced level riders. So at that point, you know, anyone, you can ride Mag 7 if you're an intermediate rider and feel pretty comfortable and confident on everything. But you'll want to ride out to Highway 191 on Gemini Bridges Road. And then you actually, where you exit is at the Moab Brand Trail. So there's more option to ride even more over there. So that's another popular one, the Mag 7 trail system. As far as shuttling, those are kind of our two big options. And then, of course, if you're looking for any kind of tour, we have a lot of local tour companies in town, and those can be great if you're coming here alone or you're coming here with a group and you're unsure just the lay of the land or where you want to go. You can call one of those companies, talk to them for a little while, and they'll get a sense of your skill level, and then they'll kind of curate your ride with the right guide on the right trail system. So we do have a number of different trail systems that are spread out. That's kind of one of the beauties of how our mountain bike trails developed, is that it puts people in different areas. So it's easy to kind of get away from people that way. We don't all go to one zone, right?
Right.
So, but the local tour companies are great for kind of sorting out which one of those systems you should go to. And they'll take you there and show you kind of the best options within them.
Yeah, that's great. Well, for those who are looking for like a less formal and maybe a little bit like more local feeling ride, are there like regular group rides in town that people could just like drop in on, or are you going to steer people away from maybe doing that?
There are not local group rides. It is, I mean, I've been mountain biking here since I was 12, you know, I'm 35 now. And there's randomly, like, throughout the years, people will start a group ride, it'll go for a while, and then it just kind of fizzles out. So there's not really any good group rides to just kind of drop in on that are consistent. You know, we kind of like in the winter, we'll do some group rides and stuff. There's not a whole lot of going on for group rides. It's an interesting part of our community that I still don't quite understand. It's just a funny thing that I think it stems from, like, so many of us work in the service industry and we have just totally different schedules, that we have like our little groups that we ride with. And then when it comes to our weekends, we're just like, get me out of here. Let's go ride.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting. The local community here can be interesting at times.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. And with so many trails around, I mean, it's easy to just probably, you know, get in a solo ride real quick, you know, whenever you have time. And so, yeah, trying to like coordinate everybody, like you said, a lot of people are in the service industry, and those hours can be odd. So yeah, I guess that makes sense. So we talked about the heat of summer in Moab, and maybe that's not the best time of year to visit. What are some good times of year to visit Moab?
March, April, May, and late September and October, sometimes into November. So kind of your bulk of your spring, bulk of your fall is definitely the best time. You know, winter can be totally hit and miss. Some years we're riding in shorts in January, and some years it doesn't get above freezing and we have a foot of snow on the ground. It's definitely best if you're coming in any kind of off season to call local shops, call the local info center, get an idea of what's going on, because we do get a lot of snow and our trails do get muddy. And you know, the biggest problem here is when our trails get muddy, we get small mud holes and people try to ride around those.
Right.
And that just impacts the desert more and more. And it widens our trails. So it's good to know what the conditions are like before you get here and, you know, realize that you can't ride or it's too muddy or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Do many places shut down like in the off season? Are there going to be like fewer restaurants or bike shops open if you come in the winter?
Yeah, I think at this point you can always find a shop and restaurant open. It used to definitely be that every restaurant would close in the winter. But at this point, everyone, you know, keeps some kind of staff on through the winter. A lot of places do close, but you'll find food. Shops close here and there for maybe a couple of weeks or a month, but most of them are staying. I know like Poison Spider stays open year round. And so, yeah, you can generally find a shop or place to eat. You know, one of our big issues now, this is that could become an issue, especially this winter, is getting workers. You know, it's the story of the West right now. Like nobody can find people to work service jobs because so many of these communities, the real estate market's gone through the roof and we can't afford to live here anymore.
Right.
So we'll see how that plays out this winter and next. This year is the first that we've really seen a lot of our restaurants closing down for a day or two in the middle of the week that would normally be open 7 days a week. And there's a sign on the door that says we're closed due to staffing shortages. And even some of our most popular restaurants are doing that. So we'll see how this winter goes with local staffing. So, but that's definitely another very important thing if you're going to any tourist community in the West, probably just about anywhere in the country right now, is if you're going out to eat, you got to be patient.
right.
Because every restaurant's understaffed, bike shops are understaffed. You know, it's something we're all dealing with right now. So,
yeah, for sure. Interesting. Well, are there certain bars or restaurants where more mountain bikers tend to hang out? I mean, when I think of Moab, there's a lot of distinctive like recreation groups, and you know, there's like the off-road vehicle drivers. I don't know what you call them. But I'm sure they have places they like to hang out. Like, are there more mountain bike friendly places that folks like us are going to want to visit when we're in Moab?
Yeah, I mean, I know like the Moab Brewery's always been, I mean, that's popular with everyone. Dewey's Restaurant is a place kind of right in downtown as well that's generally got a lot of people. You know, it's hard because there's so many people here doing so many different things that there isn't necessarily businesses catering to one distinct group. So just about anywhere you go in town, you're going to find bikers at it. Of course, the Mexican restaurants are always popular with cycling community for for whatever reason. You know, some of our more popular breakfast places like Love Muffin and the Moab Garage Co. You'll definitely find a lot of bikers hanging out at those in the mornings, getting their coffee and getting ready for a day of riding.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Well, yes, we were talking too about the best time of year to visit. Are there certain like big festivals or races that people are going to want to know about so they can try to visit town during the race, or maybe they want to avoid the race? They want to go when it's maybe not as crowded. But what are some of the big mountain bike events in Moab these days?
Yeah, right now, so we have the Outer Bike Festival,
right?
Which happens, it just happened. So it normally happens in the fall. I think they do a spring one as well. The last couple of years, of course, not a whole lot's happened with COVID and everything.
Yeah.
But Outer Bike is a big event to check out. And that's a big demo event. So you can get on bikes. You can talk to companies about what's coming out and what's hot and new.
And that's one that started there in Moab, right? It's put on by Western Spirit, I believe. And of course, now there's Outer Bikes all over the country, but that's sort of the original one, right?
Yep. They're doing them all over. And it's a great event. It's really fun. You know, and they do a good job of always putting it at the right time of year to have some incredible weather for it.
Yeah.
So, So that's probably the biggest one. The Moab Hoedown Festival happens during Halloween, or the closest weekend to Halloween every year. That's held by Chili Pepper Bike Shop. Okay. It didn't happen this year. They're bringing it back for next year. The great thing about that event is that all proceeds go to our Moab Bike Park. So we have a dirt jump park here.
Nice.
And so all the proceeds go to that. So that's definitely a cool one to come to town for and get involved with. They generally do a race along with it and a dirt jump contest and some group rides and stuff. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I believe the only other race that's happening still is the Trans Rockies Moab Rocks race just happened a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a hybrid XC. It's like an advanced XC stage race. So they do 3 days of racing kind of all over the place. So trying to recall, if you go to moabhappenings.com, that's one of your best places, or Discover Moab. Both those places give you tons of info. One of the bigger, we have a lot of running races in Moab now. That's definitely those happen during just about every season at this time. And it's real good to check on when those are happening, because they can definitely kind of overrun an area. They kind of take over like the trailhead they're at or whatever, you know. You can still go and recreate on those trails, but you probably want to avoid it because there's just a lot going on. You know, this weekend we have the Moab Trail Marathon. That's I think a couple thousand people. So it's some of these events are huge. Which they're all great. They're all it's always good to see them, but you do want to kind of maybe work around them whatever day they're racing. So
Well, I imagine based on where Moab is, surrounded by a lot of public lands, there is a lot of camping available, probably some of it improved campgrounds and then some of it sort of unimproved. Does lodging and like campsites tend to fill up in Moab, you know, during certain seasons or around certain events? Like, do you have any recommendations for folks who are trying to figure out where to stay when they visit Moab?
Yeah, definitely. You want to plan ahead if you're coming in spring or fall. Mm-hmm. Lodging in town gets very expensive as well. You know, it's not uncommon to see the Motel 6 going for 200 plus a night
wow.
for a hotel room. So, yeah. So definitely plan ahead in that regards. If you're planning on staying in a hotel, get your reservations early. As far as camping, there's a lot of established BLM campgrounds that, you know, they are pay per night, but they have restrooms, generally have picnic tables and campfire rings and that sort of stuff. We always ask people to try to use those because there's, you know, there's over 3 million visitors a year to the area around Moab.
Yeah.
So the impacts are huge. So dispersed camping is a little harder here. There's a lot of regulations on where you can and cannot camp. And within Grand County, which is our county we're in, you actually have to pack out all human waste as well now.
Oh, wow.
So if you're coming here and you are dispersed camping, make sure you have a portable toilet or wag bags or some way, because we just have so many visitors who are camping in the same places. Even our dispersed camping, you know, it's kind of there's certain areas you can do it in, and you'll find a lot of toilet paper, you know.
Yeah, that definitely makes it less appealing as an option if you know you got to carry your waste out. So yeah, that's good to know.
It's good to know. It's good to plan ahead on that stuff and, you know, kind of do some research. Discover Moab has a great site on camping in the area with kind of the regulations and where you can and cannot camp.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it's definitely plan ahead with that.
So Tyson, you mentioned that there is a new trail route, the Raptor Trail or Raptor Route, that's under construction and hopefully is going to be open next fall. Are there any other trails in the area that are being expanded or maybe new trails in the works for the future?
Yeah, right now the Raptor Route's kind of what's on our list for new trail. A lot of our trails are getting to this 5 to 10 year window, and they're needing a lot more heavy maintenance. So a lot of what we're doing, what our crew's doing right now, is just doing these bigger maintenance projects. So rebuilding rock ramps. You know, we're actually having to go in and rebuild sections of trail that are just starting to kind of fall apart because of their age and erosion. We also had a lot of monsoon rains this summer that took out all sorts of trails in the area. A lot of work to do this year.
Yeah. I mean, maintenance is probably huge. I mean, with that many trails that are available there, and people expect when they visit that the trails are going to be in good shape. And I mean, that's why they go to Moab, because of the great trails. So it definitely makes a lot of sense that you'd have to spend a lot of resources just making the trails stay as awesome as they are. Is that a big part of the budget as well? Like just regular trail maintenance every year?
Yeah. I mean, that's our biggest thing we do at the moment is, you know, our desert environment's pretty fragile compared to a lot of others, because we don't have a lot of plant growth here. And we actually have what's called biological soil crust, or a lot of people know it as cryptobiotic soil. And so those soils are lining our trails, and when they get impacted, you know, those footprints or those tire tracks can be visible for years. So a big part of what we do is, you know, we actually physically go out and rake tracks that go off trail, not only because it's, you know, it's an impact, and raking those tracks out helps that biological soil crust grow faster. But it also helps the trails stay narrow. So every time someone rides off a trail to get out of the way of somebody, or, you know, a group stops in an area where there's soil, that impacts that zone and can widen the trail significantly. So not only is it impactful to our environment, but it's also very impactful to our trails. So, you know, that's one of our biggest things. So, and then, two of us are full time. So a lot of our, time in the summer when it's too hot to work outside, and in the winter when it's snowy, is, working on pushing out trail etiquette information. Just because, you know, unlike if you're in a mountain terrain or an area where there's a lot of vegetation, if you pull off the trail, it's no big deal. But here in the desert, it's a pretty big deal. That's why, you know, we do the lining and the raking out. So those are kind of two of our big, you know, we do a lot of work on maintenance and a lot of work on trying to educate users, either at trailheads or before they get here, on just kind of the sensitive terrain we have. You know, a lot of people are like, it's a desert, it's a wasteland. And it's like, no, it's like every part of our desert is doing what it can to survive. And because of that, it's more fragile and important that we keep our impacts minimal.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Are you seeing more of a need for this, like as Moab becomes more popular, or, you know, are people riding more, or are there certain trails that are like more susceptible to this like overuse than others?
Yeah, I mean, we're every year it's, you know, mountain biking is growing so much. And then with like the NICA, Utah High School Cycling League, you know, we're injecting thousands of new riders into these trail systems every year. And those users aren't getting the education that, you know, that they need ahead of time, and especially not getting education that is curated for desert environments. You know, desert environments are different than mountain environments, and kind of what we were just talking about. And so, yeah, more and more every year, it's more important that we get this info out to people and continue to expand these education programs and try to make less impact. You know, because we're just we're all a piece of that impact, and there's every year more of us. So,
right. Well, is there anything else that mountain bikers need to know before visiting Moab, maybe for the first time, or maybe for the first time in a while?
Yeah, I mean, I would do you know, do your research. get online and discover Moab's got amazing info for the whole area. If you go to moabtrailmix.com, that routes you to our county page. It's got a lot of this kind of user trail etiquette, desert etiquette information on it. If you haven't been in the area in the last 10 years or so, definitely look around at what the popular trails are now. Mm-hmm. There's been a number of times where I've been out in the desert, and come across somebody who's out on like Poison Spider Mesa, which in the 90s was a popular mountain bike trail. And if you go out there now, you'll be destroyed because the sand is so much worse than it used to be from like UTVs and Jeeps just spinning tires. Like the sand is horrendous out there. So do research on what new trails there are in the area and know that, we have over 150 miles of mountain bike specific single track. Really do your research. And if you've never mountain biked here and you're kind of new to mountain biking, I would recommend going into a shop and asking them where you should start. And they'll help kind of curate some good rides for you and get you in the right direction.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, Tyson, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about Moab and to share your local trails and your local community. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you very much. It's been great.
Well, you can find more information and resources, as Tyson mentioned, at discovermoab.com, also moabtrailmix.com. That's all we've got this week. We'll talk to you again next week.